so important. Let's draw community
attention. Thank you for saying that. Okay, thank you. Again, I don't mean to be, I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I'm just saying that's the gist of the, not the gist, that is the intent and the and what this hearing is about. So, okay,
yeah, sure.
Wenbo,
thank you.
Would you like to go next, sir?
Can that agenda item be spoken about after the meeting today?
This is solely on the superintendent contract, ma'am, okay?
Okay, let's clarify. President Karpik has tried to clarify. This contract for the superintendent, we're following new state law guidelines, okay? The contract and then the notice of the public hearing was posted on December 5th. X number of days later, we are holding a public hearing. The only item we are talking about tonight is the superintendent's contract, okay? If you wish to discuss anything else, you can email us or talk to us after the meeting. So those who are speaking tonight will be on the superintendent's contract. It was posted, it's on the internet, it's on our website. We have hard copies over there if you didn't get to get one.
Okay. All right, Lynn, would you like to go ahead? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Regarding the contract, I would like
to... Sir, do you mind if you just say,
oh, yeah.
Spell it and say where you're from?
My name is Wenbin Yu, and I'm a father of four children who all went through, one already graduated from this side, and three more are still in the school district. And I'm a professor at Purdue University. And I'm leaving University Farm. And can I proceed now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, for the contract, I would like to know, first, what market analysis have you done to come up with this package? That's the first question. Second, what are the qualifications of this candidate? Without knowing the qualifications, it's hard for the public to comment on the numbers. Third, why the second candidate has already been rejected before the contract has been finalized? Rejecting her before finalizing the contract doesn't help your negotiation. And also, since the rejected candidate happens to be a female, this begs a serious DEI question, as I will talk more later. So regarding the rejection of the second candidate...
Again, that doesn't pertain to the contract here.
Oh, yeah. Otherwise, which...
By state statute, we have to bring it. We had to reach consensus on a candidate.
So you come up with a contract, you must reject one. You have a particular candidate associated
with
you.
We have not voted on the candidate. And then per state statute, and Mr. Ryan, if you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but we have to bring a contract up. It doesn't have a name on it. That's the way that it works.
So you don't negotiate the contract with a particular target candidate in mind?
Pardon me?
You didn't negotiate this contract with a particular candidate in your mind?
We did negotiate this contract with a particular candidate.
So then you already rejected one candidate. So this is related with the contract.
We have not voted on that. Okay, but again, this is pertaining to the contract. Go ahead if you have other things on with respect.
Yeah, that's why I say that to come up with a contract for a particular candidate, you have to basically turn down another candidate. That is a serious DEI question I want to ask.
We brought forward one candidate. We reached a consensus, as we talked about last meeting.
No, that's not what I'm arguing. I know that you have a general consensus, although one of your board member does not agree. But what I say is that you reject the second candidate has serious DEI concern. I'm part of the DEI committee.
All right, you can express that concern that we rejected another candidate.
So I can do it now?
Go ahead.
Okay, good. So that is really related with lack of transparency resulted in serious DEI concerns. The second candidate is a female, clearly underrepresented among the superintendents. According to our article, it's a known fact that...
Again, sir, this is not about the contract that was brought out, And we're only discussing the contract. I don't mean to be difficult here, but it's just
no,
the contract.
You come up with numbers. You basically raise a serious DEI concern.
Right, but we only are addressing the contract that was on the website. So you want
me just talking about the numbers? As I said, you don't put up the qualifications. It doesn't make sense to talking about numbers.
I don't know if I understand.
So if you don't have qualifications of a particular candidate, how much you offer, it's just a number. You know, you did all the additions and multiplications, correct?
I understand, but we are following state statute to do so. That's just the way the process works.
You know, that you don't have information for the public, how we can comment on the numbers. As I said, you did the math right. That's a third grade math.
I understand that, but that is the state statute that we have to follow.
So I want to raise all these that the reason you come up with a contract is target for a particular candidate. To get this contract and target for the particular candidate, you have to reject another candidate, which is a huge DEI concern, and we have talked about in the DEI community.
Okay.
Thank you.
So you don't allow me to say what are the DEI concerns?
No, we're not discussing DEI tonight. Again, this is
okay. I will do it the next time. Thank you.
Superintendent contract. Thank you. All right, Doug Masson, you're up next, please.
Good afternoon, Doug Masson, 3100 Hamilton Street. First of all, thank you for all the work you've done in the superintendent selection process over the last several months. When the General Assembly adopted the law requiring these hearings, I got the sense that the intent was really to put school boards in an uncomfortable position. I mean, these public hearings, they do put downward pressure on superintendent salaries, which, you know, is not a bad thing. But it's also a theme where the General Assembly makes school justify every dime that we're spending on public education. It's hard to know. Part of the problem is it's hard to know what a position like this is actually worth. You know, on the one end, you've got the mayor of West Lafayette, big important job, affects all of us in town, who makes something like $105,000 plus benefits. I'm a county government guy, so I happen to know that some of our local county officials make even less than that. On the other side, you know, the state of Indiana set compensation for our judges, our prosecutor, our chief public defender at close to $160,000 plus benefits. I think the exponent reported that the average salary for Purdue's top 100 employees was close to $350,000 a year. Like I read that, you know, the president of Purdue made $900,000 or something like that last year. So is a superintendent job more or less valuable to our community than a judge or a professor or a mayor? Is it an easier job? Is it a harder job? Really tough questions to answer. So as I understand it, we're proposing to pay this individual a base salary of about $160,000, total package in the range of $240,000 a year. Is that the right salary? It's difficult to say. I can Google salaries for various school districts, various kinds of jobs, but ultimately there's enough range in compensation, variety of circumstance, that beyond a certain point, it's a judgment call as to what the relevant metrics should be. Should be similar number of students, maybe similar academic performance levels in other schools, maybe similar costs of livings in the school district. We can point to schools of similar size that pay less, and we can point to some that pay more. But size is just one variable among many. Small populations can have big challenges. You can ask any teacher how much work two or three students can add to a class. So, you know, maybe the fact that we're a small school means that there's less staff at central office and therefore superintendent has to do more work. For my part, my view is our schools are the heart of our community. We're asking this person to take a job that's 24/7. Ideally, the person will move into the community and put down roots. West Lafayette is not the cheapest place to live, and in part, that's because of the quality of our schools. It's a big job, not unlike running a $40 million company. You've got 150 teachers or so, plus the administration and support staff required to run a school. Between full and part-time, I think that gets you close to 500 employees, all things told. And unlike your average company, every year they have to adopt to a pile of new rules the state throws out. So we have the best school system in the state. We want to make it better. Position comes with high expectations and a lot of pressure, and that seems to be worth something in terms of compensation. My opinion would be that as long as the salary is somewhere in the ballpark, doesn't make sense to be penny wise and pound foolish with this decision or nickel and dime every line item. But ultimately, it's up to you all to make this decision. I think it's worth noting that I asked for that job and I didn't get it. You guys were entrusted with this. I haven't spent months thinking about this question. Sure, there are any number of variables that I haven't considered that you have. I haven't consulted with Ross or Steve or any of the people who know about the school's finances or with people who have expertise about superintendent compensation. I assume you have. I'm sure we can find people in the newspaper comments section who are extremely confident in their ability to make these decisions without putting in that kind of work. They effortlessly know more medicine than doctors and more law than constitutional scholars. Sure, they can probably run a school without breaking this plan. But I'm not as smart as those people. So thank you to members of the school board for taking the time and doing the work to do this.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. Next up is Amanda Hart.
Good afternoon, everyone. Is my mic on? Okay. Lovely. Hello, my name is Amanda Hart. I am a teacher at the junior senior high. And Dave, that was very well said. Great job. I wanted to just take a moment and thank the board. I know you've worked very hard over the last succession of months to try to put this together. Going over the contract information, everything looks very well laid out and it looks very informative, breaking this out into the columns that you have. And when compared to a couple of similar school corporations, this looks quite comparable and honestly might even be a little lower than those school corporations are paying their current superintendent. I don't know everything about school finance and I don't know all of the factors that go into this, but we are trusting you to make that wonderful decision for us. We know that you know that this is an incredibly important job, and we're trusting you to pick the right person and to compensate them so they love this place as much as we do. So thank you again for all of your hard work.
Thank you, Amanda. Appreciate it. Next up is Mary Dell Forbes.
Hi, I'm Mary Dell Forbes. So this is my teacher voice. I'm an English teacher, 3048 Benton Street across from the elementary school. I think that Deb and Amanda covered it quite adequately. We elected all of you to do a job, and we ask and trust you that you've done your due diligence in finding not only the best candidates, but being good stewards of our public coffers. You don't want an English teacher crunching your numbers or second guessing your decision. I know two of my colleagues would be more than adequate, but I certainly would not. But I just wanted to say we elected you, we trust you, we thank you in advance for doing your job. The numbers that I did see from neighboring school corporations used to be quite competitive. So, you know, first down, move the chains, onward and forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Dell. Next up is Troy James.
Hi, my name is Troy James. I live on Ravinia Road in West Lafayette.
Thank you.
I have some confusion about something in the contract. In section 1.01, second paragraph, first sentence, it says this agreement will automatically renew at the end of each school year for a further term of 3 years unless either party notifies the other party, so on and so forth. So I can't quite understand what this is saying. It either could be interpreted as at the end of each school year we'll add another 3 years onto the contract. That doesn't seem likely because then the superintendent would end up with a lifetime contract pretty quickly. It could be interpreted as each year we kind of renew and start over with a new 3 year contract and add another year onto it. I kind of thought the intent would be that, you know, after 3 years, it would automatically renew. That makes the most sense, but that's not really how it reads. So I would encourage the board to clarify that language before the contract is signed, because I think it's a little confusing. And if it is set up so that there's always 3 years left on the superintendent's contract, then if something goes wrong and it doesn't work, it's harder to deal with that situation. So I'd like to, again, encourage support to clarify that language. Finally, I would just like to say that you had a great deal of patience with the last two comments, which did not deal with the contract. I think you should have more patience with our first two speakers in what they were saying. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob, do you have any clarification on the contract?
We'll take a close look at it. It's pursuant to state statute. You're permitted to permit someone to extend their contract one time, and that's at the end of the first term.
Okay.
Right. So if we need to clarify that, we'll do that.
Okay. Brady Kalb, you're next.
Thank you, Brady Kalb. The two kids at Westside and live in New York. My comment that I had planned for tonight was not specifically about the contract, so is it the board's position that I not speak tonight?
Right, this is pertaining to the contract, and actually the other two people did address the contract as well. If you have something on the contract, by all means, Brady.
Understood, sir. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay. Next up, and I guess we did speak with first person, David Jost, you're next. Is anybody else? Yeah. And I apologize for pronouncing it. I think you spoke first. I want to make sure I didn't skip somebody. Spelled Q-I-A-N. That was you. Okay. I wanted to make sure. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Good evening. My name is David Jost. I'm in my ninth year as a teacher with the corporation. My wife, Melissa, is also a teacher with the corporation as well. We spend most of our waking moments doing our best to work for the students of this community and are grateful to have that responsibility. Based on some amount of comparison, it seems the contract on the table parallels comparable districts. I had the opportunity to lead the contract negotiations for the teachers union this year. And while certainly seeing us at the top of the state is among our goals, I think, you know, because of limited growth and other things in enrollment, that may not be as feasible as I might have liked for it to be. And so it seemed like, again, based on some amount of comparison, where we fall with teacher pay seems to be approximately in the same spot as where the superintendent compensation ends up. And so functionally, what does that look like? Well, the districts that, you know, I pay more attention to are the districts, you know, around the Indianapolis area. And to a large extent, that's because that's where I grew up. And if I saw employment elsewhere, probably in that general area. And so it seems like a lot of the bigger suburban districts, large Indianapolis area, their superintendents are compensated more in the same way we see by and large with their teachers. But relative to most of the rest of the state, it seems like this package is above that, and then hopefully that will be what we need to retain, hopefully a high-quality superintendent. Is the superintendent benefit package more generous than the teacher benefit package? Certainly. I doubt we'll be able to find a district where that's not the case. But ultimately, I'm more concerned about the quality of the individual on the receiving end of the contract. I look forward to meeting the board selection and look forward to working together to provide the best possible educational environment for students in this community. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thanks, David. Okay, that's the people that signed up to address the board. Comments from the board regarding any of the superintendent contracts?
Yes.
Dr. Yan, go ahead.
Sorry, my talk might be a little bit long. Actually, I originally prepared a PowerPoint presentation, but unfortunately, my PC doesn't work with a mic set up there. And so I will appreciate your patience, first of all. And first, I would like to comment on the process related to the contract in the last stage. I believe that it was not in the best interest of our district that the board officers reject the strong, probably even more suitable candidate for us before the negotiation with the current finalist.
Again, I appreciate your comment, but we're really focusing on the superintendent contract.
This is related because it's a contract. Okay.
All right, go ahead.
I just feel unless the other finalist was not acceptable at all, a common practice is we hold the qualified finalist till the contract is signed with the top choice. And we have, that way we have more negotiation power. If the finalist ask for a package that is too high, we can still extend the job to the other finalist. Second, we can also have a backup plan. If the top choice doesn't work, for example, the top choice use our offer to get a raise in his or her current district, then we can still offer the job to the second, the other finalist. And I also wish I were given an opportunity to discuss this contract before it was extended to the candidate or released to the public, because I feel my discussion right now actually potentially may jeopardize my relationship with a new superintendent. However, for the best benefit of our district, I have to share my perception here today in the public. Second, and I did some research to look at the relationship between salary and the district and the predictors. And to prepare for the contract review, I obtained the 2021 superintendent salary data from the Indiana Board Association. And they collected data from 183 districts from Indiana schools, And I tried several variables to predict the superintendent salary and found that the superintendent salary actually is strongly and positively correlated with average daily membership, which is ADM. In other words, the more students a district has, the higher the superintendent salary is. It's not surprising because more students means more schools, more teachers, more administrators for the superintendent to manage. Our ADM is 2,253, according to Dr. Pettibone's report in September, and our ADM has been below 2,500 in recent years, as far as I know. Then I draw a scatter plot, and it shows actually for this ADM, the typical salary is below 150K. And I also run a regression to predict a base salary based on ADM, assuming that our ADM is 2,500, which is much higher than what we have now. Then the predicted salary is 127K. And this trend is confirmed in reality. I have more than 10 school districts in the range with a ADM around 2,500, and all of them are below 150K, except for one district, which is Danville's. That district has a higher salary than its counterparts, and all the other ones are around 130 and so on. Also, our finalists come from a smaller district, and even smaller than ours. And this candidate's current salary is 127. In other words, we don't, 127K. In other words, we don't need to go all the way up to 160 to attract this finalist to come to our district. Especially our district is so attractive by itself. And we have another strong finalist competing for this same position. And now let's compare the proposed salary with our previous superintendent. And I guess your rationale for the 160 is that's what you offered to Dr. Kalin in his last contract. And I checked Dr. Kalin's salary history, and in the past 6 years, from 2015 to 2017, his salary was 137K. And from 18 to 20, his salary was 160K. However, we need to remember that Dr. Kalin worked in our district for 14 years, since 2007. By the time when he earned 160K, he was experienced with all kinds of issues in our district and had a lot of achievement. For example, he successfully led our district to pass a referendum, developed the strategic plan, renovated the building, and built a Willis, and much more. Also, Dr. Kalin was one of the three finalists in the superintendent search in South Carolina in 2015, according to the Journal and the Courier. That probably helped him get the raise as well. But still, he didn't get a raise every year. And in the current contract, the potential new superintendent will get 160K to start with. Plus, this candidate will have 3% raise every year. Also, it's unclear in the document what will warrant the candidate to get the raise promised in this contract. And the 160K starting salary will make sense if the candidate is from districts such as TSC, LSC, Carmel, or Zanesville, which are either similar to our district in terms of student demographic backgrounds, students' needs, family expectations, or if the candidate comes from a more complicated or challenging district than ours, therefore the candidate can handle an easier task in our district with his or her experience. But the potential candidate comes from a district that is vastly different from ours, and the job there seems to be easier to handle than ours overall. In the following, I will present some comparisons based on the data from Great School and Niche and the US News without any identifiable information. And first, I already mentioned earlier, this candidate's district is much smaller than ours, and it ranked after 10,000 nationally. And as you know, our district ranked 239 nationally. And so the ranking is not comparable at all. And also, students' demographic information shows that this candidate's district is very homogeneous. Only 6% of students are minority students, and almost no students are English learners. In contrast, 40% of our students are minority students. And another thing is our district does well on almost all dimensions, like test scores, student progress, and college readiness, and except for equity. We got 4 out of 10, and which is consistent across almost all the websites that rank schools. We are not doing very well there in the equity issue. Unfortunately, this candidate's district is not doing well on equity dimension either. They also got 4 out of 10. So, yeah. And another thing, I also compared the advanced course taking. And as you may know, that a large number of our students take AP classes and science, math, and other ones. For example, 13% of our students took AP math courses, and 12% of our students took AP science courses, and 29 of our students took many other ones. And those actually are also used to rank schools, for example, by US News. Unfortunately, the potential candidate actually is current school districts have very small percent of students are taking AP courses. For example, percent of students who participate in AP Math is only 2%. And percent of students who participate in AP Science is lower than 1. And other AP course participation is about 5%. In contrast, we have almost 30%, 6 times more. And as for popular colleges, which is, you know, students, what students are interested in going after graduation.
Dr. Yun, I'm sorry, I just have a question. I don't mean to interrupt you, but could you help me understand what this is going to do with the contract? Like what I'm just...
Yeah, this is about a qualification. So if we have a superintendent from, let's say, Camo, and Lancewell, and who have similar deal with similar issues, have a tracking record of doing it well, then, you know, I feel we can even offer more. So it's really, for example, in higher education, if we hire somebody who have published a lot of papers, got a lot of grants, and then we give that person a big package, in contrast with somebody who is, you know, not that experienced. I don't have a lot of pages. I prefer to finish them.
Thank you for answering me.
Yeah, I already explained it. This is related to qualification. I have.
We are allowing her to finish.
Sorry, I just wanted to understand what she was aiming at because.
Yeah, this is about.
Okay.
But yeah, also, I just have a couple of more pages.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I really appreciate your patience because I spent some time putting this together. I do wish to share them. And so for the popular colleges, the majority of our students expect to go to Purdue or IU, and a large number of our students are also interested in going to the best universities in the US, such as UMich, Northwestern, UChicago, Stanford, UC Berkeley, but it's not the case in the current candidates district. And the top 10 popular colleges doesn't include any of the best colleges that our students prefer to go. And so overall, again, these candidates district is very different from ours. Yeah, finally, I'd like to discuss in growth and evaluation. As an educator myself, I deeply believe that everyone can learn and can improve if you care and you take effort. And the candidate is doing well in the current district, although the candidate's current district is vastly different from ours, and the candidate lacks experience in addressing many of our needs. And the candidate doesn't have a specific plan yet for many of the challenges we are facing. However, I believe that the candidate can learn in our community and eventually meet the needs of the students with diverse backgrounds and diverse needs. But now the question is, regarding the current contract, then in this situation, what should be the appropriate compensation for the candidate at this time? And should we start with a fair market salary and leave room for the raise after the candidate catch up and well meet the needs of our district so that we can provide incentive and meanwhile control budget in our already distressed and financial situation? And also, should we remove the automatic raise every year as stated in the current contract? Especially, our hardworking but underpaid teachers are not the promised one. Our teachers' average salary ranked 14th for last year's school year, according to the Journal and the Courier. And even though our school ranked almost the top one in the state, but our teachers' salary are not ranked that way. So finally, I wonder how we evaluate the superintendent either for the raise and the contract renewal. Here are what I have been thinking. We need to collect data from various stakeholders about their satisfactions of the superintendent, such as teachers, staff members, administrators, parents, students, and the taxpayers in general. We also needed to evaluate whether the superintendent meet the important expectations, such as better teacher compensation recognition, which I personally feel we need to do much better here, and also putting Happy Hollow building in a good use. And right now we have empty building here, wasting money daily. And a referendum and increasing ADM to recruit more students to solve the problem of the landlock issue, and improving equity. And again, as I said earlier, we don't do well there, and we need to close the learning gap. And meeting diverse student needs, such as those with special needs, those from disadvantaged groups, and those with high abilities. And also, we may building collaborations with neighboring districts and the Purdue University to share resources and eliminate unnecessary spending to have a healthy budget so we can pay our staff members better. And if you also believe that those evaluation criterions are needed or some other ones you can also add, then where do we include those criteria in the contract for the raise and the renewal? Finally, I also have a question about the contract renewal. How does it work? And when will it be renewed? And how long will it be renewed every time? And just now, I think Troy asked the questions at which I had similar concerns. I found that the language in the contract is not clear. It may lead to confusion and, even worse legal issues. So we need to clarify that. Thanks.
Thank you.
Those contractual issues, though, in terms of timing, we've had, as at least if history is any teacher, we have done evaluations every year, but also we are bound by the state statute of what we can allow in terms of extensions, et cetera. So that will be dealt with from that standpoint. Okay, other comments or questions, please? I mean, I will say, Dr. Yin, we did have an interview process where all those questions were asked of the candidates. So I think your points are important, but they have been addressed. And this is something that will be with this new candidate, will be important for this person, will address the needs set by the board. So a lot of those things are very important, and I would agree with that. It's something that also that we will be in a position as a board, or whoever is on the board during this person's tenure, to be able to steer that person in the right direction. So, other questions or comments?
All right. I have a question for Dr. Yin. From your comments, it appears you think the $160,000 is too high. What do you believe is a fair salary?
I think 145, which already 10% raise from what the candidate has right now, and also leave space for improvement, because I feel with the candidate's current experience record, I don't feel the candidate is ready to kind of fully address what we need.
What about the other items in the contract compensation? Do you have any concerns about those?
I haven't studied those benefits yet. Yeah, I don't have data for that, but I have data for the salary one from the SBA. So I only analyzed that part.
Yeah,
we did send a spreadsheet out with comparable.
Yeah, I saw that one. And so the thing is whether, whether they are comparable, because one issue is the school size. For example, in that spreadsheet, there are schools like a Como and a Zanesville, and they are both bigger than ours. That's number one. The second is those superintendents are experienced. And so many times I noticed that a superintendent will got a raise after, you know, several years. For example, the superintendent in LSC and he less recently got a raise, probably last year or something several years ago. And so because, you know, even Rocky got a raise like 4 years ago, and after they became more experienced, then the higher salary will make more sense, seems to me.
Let me clarify something about Dr. Killian. He was offered a raise every year based on his evaluation. Because of the financial condition of our school corporation, he always turned that down for the first 3 or 4 years, wanting any money we had to go to the teachers.
He chose not to take.
He chose not to take.
Just as a matter of example.
Anyway.
Okay, go ahead.
That's all I had.
Okay, any other questions?
The only other thing I clarified, Dr. Killian came in as an assistant superintendent. He hadn't been a superintendent. That's something else to know.
Okay, thank you.
Can you speak a little louder?
Go ahead.
What did you say?
The superintendent we had previously, Dr. Killian, came in as an assistant superintendent. He was not a sitting superintendent. So his compensation reflected that.
So, Dr. Killian's starting salary was 137. Oh, the 137 was already a raise from his initial salary. Because he was a superintendent for 14 years.
I don't know.
I only had the data from the last 6 years. I believe he got a raise during the 14 years.
But what Dr. Springer said is true, that we offered him raises after each year. I don't know what his previous salary was, but that's what he did come in, I believe, at 137 or whatever that was. Is it right, or 120?
I think it was lower.
Lower than that.
I have some questions. Is it open to everyone?
If you had to sign up to speak in advance of doing that, so.
Do you have a specific question
on the contract? Sure, do you want to ask any man?
Yeah, it's nothing adversarial, I'm sure.
No, and we're not, that's fine, but it needs to be on the...
And can you let me know for next time how you sign up in advance?
We have a sign-up sheet there. So
you come in and supervise yes. On that? How does it work?
Well, it's before the meeting.
I see, because my team was not very conducive, and I just got to know about this yesterday.
Okay.
It wasn't in my schedule. So I'm Molly Chantry, I'm an assistant professor in Purdue University, and this is awesome. I really appreciate getting to know, you know, who are the other stakeholders as parents. Our son just started at junior high, so I'm very excited. A few questions, and this might be super naive because we just got to know there was a finalist. Some of the things that Dr. Ian mentioned, what is the current school district? I don't know what is supposed to be confidential at this point. The size, the school size or the school district size from where the finalist is coming. Is all of this available to parents? And again, like I said, this is naive because I just got to know the finalist has been selected. So if we can get a snapshot of the credentials of the finalist, is the finalist sealed in stone? So are we just talking about the contract? The finalist is already there. We don't have any options to, you know, look at the different finalists. And the other thing is, typically when you have new administrators or faculty who are selected in Purdue, typically the person gets a talk. And this is a great forum, so I'm wondering if at any point, one, is it sealed in stone? Second, is the finalist going to give a open talk where we have an opportunity to get to know our new superintendent, a potential new superintendent? I think some of the things that I'm concerned about is where the finalist is coming from. What is the ability of the superintendent to deal with different types of students underperforming, overperforming, things like that?
Let me not interrupt, but just so you understand the process a little bit, we have 7 days from today's hearing, we will be able to announce, we'll vote on the contract, vote on the superintendent. Until that moment, it's confidential in terms of who that person is. We will be in the process of, certainly that person will certainly be a big part of that person's job is to meet and greet the public. So you'll absolutely
have. And my final comment is, Dr. Ian brought that up, and I think that's excellent. If there is a way to put it into the annual evaluation, that these are the different stakeholders, including parents, because I see, you know, a lot of parents are really excited that, you know,
sure,
new things happening, better things happening. And 289, if that's the rank of our school, we can definitely do better. I did not know that's the rank of our school district. So what are the fines
Yeah, that's $289 in the country.
In the country, yeah. But I'm sure we can do better.
$26,000.
Yeah, okay.
So our cost of engineering is around $4, and here we can do way better than $29. So I would really appreciate if there is a way for the superintendent finalist to come in. I did it before he's a finalist, but I don't know what the exact process is, because like I said, I just got to know about it. If he can have a word with the parents, something like this, you know, just give a talk, the parents get to know you, you know.
Yeah, and he will do that. That person will do that.
And the second thing is, if there is a way for the person to be evaluated every year by different stakeholders, and how will that evaluation be taken into account? Because given that I now know, like, I constantly do not know our school district around 2089, so what will be the kinds of inputs, and what will be the kinds of things that the superintendent will do to go up, right? Okay. So it'd be really nice to have. And I can give a kind of some of the pointers, because I'm really excited I came here. It was a little bit of a rush, but I want to make sure, you know, our voices are going to be good. Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
May I please say a few words?
Yeah, you may. Go ahead.
I will admit that when I was elected, I didn't know anything about being on the school board. I thought I knew a lot, and I have learned a great deal in the last year. And one of the most important things I've learned is that the school board has three main functions. We sign off on contracts and the financial accounts payable on a monthly basis, the legal side of it. The second thing we do is set the strategic plan and the vision in cooperation with the superintendent for the corporation. And the third thing we do is supervise the superintendent and evaluate that person. And when it becomes necessary, we search for a new one. And I understand that the process appears as though it's been very opaque. However, I assure everyone that the answers to the survey that were taken were considered carefully, not only by myself, but by all of my colleagues, not only during the interviews, when we were writing our questions for the interviews, and when we were discussing the various candidates. And the the analogy between public education and Purdue is not accurate. In higher education, there is a lot of encouragement to move around. And in public education, that can be seen as disloyalty. It can be seen negatively in the home district that someone might be coming from. And so I understand that a lot of people in town have a lot of experience with public education, and there might be a lot of experience with those searches. However, it's not the same animal. And I think it's important to understand that even though it's both things are education, they're just not the same. And that's all I would like to say.
Right. Anything else? We'll close the hearing. All right. Well, thank you all for attending tonight. And we will have a scheduled vote on the contract and on the individual. That will be next Monday night at 5:30, and will be at the it will be in the LGI room, cafeteria of Willis, the intermediate school. So thank you all for attending.